It's just amazing what happens when a real American gets a little taste of French culture.
One in the cornfield.
Such a whore.
Bitch.
Pussy's gang.
Piss ass.
Easy fag.
You're a pig.
Mommy! Mommy!
Try to calm down, Alex. If it wanted to kill you, it'd have already done it.
I'll be back, Alex.
I swear. He can't know anyone else is in the house. Okay?
Tonight, in case I don't come back.
Would you please help me?
The Sauras. They have a farm around here. I am a friend of their daughter, Alexis.
This guy broke in during the night. He broke in and he murdered everyone.
My friend's been taken away. She's in the back of his old truck. He killed a guy at a gas station.
This place is perfect for bringing girls in at night, isn't it, Jimmy? Don't tell me you never did it.
Don't you touch me! Don't you touch me, I said! You bitch, you're crazy. I wouldn't dare you to try it.
This is Lauren Marie Taylor from Friday the 13th Part 2 and Girls Night Out. And you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are listening to The Hysteria Continues, and this is episode 189. And this time we're heading across the English Channel to the French countryside, or actually the Romanian countryside, but for the French New Wave Horror, High Tension, a.k.a. Switchblade Romance, a.k.a. Haute Tension, chosen by Eric. So how are you doing today, Eric?
I am doing awesome. Ooh la la, sacre bleu.
I'm very glad to hear it. So, Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm the opposite of high tensed.
Oh, but are you high? Once.
I'm high relaxed.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's not funny.
Well, fair enough. So, Joseph, are you high? Or are you tense?
Oui, oui, parlez-vous français?
Excellent.
Un petit peu.
Petit peu. Is this our first French slasher movie?
I think it could be.
Oh, this is French. I forgot about that.
Oh, Nathan, really?
Oh, Nathan.
Well, I mean, I knew it was foreign. I knew it was dubbed, but I forgot that it was French.
Okay. Well, it is the there's not many French slasher movies. Maybe we can talk about a few others later, but
inside French.
Inside is French, yes. That was part that yeah. These all those kind of, well, we'll talk about it later, but all of those new wave kind of there was a term for it, and I'll find it in a minute, but the
extreme horror,
extreme
extreme,
yeah, they all came after the relative success of this film in international markets, although it well, there's a lot to be said about this movie, and of course it has one of the most controversial twists of all slasher movies, which divides opinion and polarizes opinion completely. So it's going to be interesting to see which side we come back down on. So, but before we get onto that, let's have a little chat about what we've been watching recently. So, Joseph, have you seen anything of note in the last few weeks?
No, I was going to watch a movie from the 70s, but I got sidetracked, so I'll probably talk about that on the next episode. I haven't watched anything. I've been so busy.
Okay, well, fair enough. Nathan, how about you?
I watched a new slasher movie called The Ranger.
Oh,
it's about a group of horribly unlikable, despicable people going into the woods and running across this demented ranger who likes to cite like various park rules while he kills them.
Well, it's like Yogi Bear.
yeah, in a way. But the IMDb kind of has a 5.2 out of 10, and I would probably be inclined to agree with that. It's one of those movies that's let down for me by the characters being so unlikable. Like, it just takes a little bit too long, in my opinion, to start killing them off. Because you guys know one of my favorite movies is Crinoline Head, and it has a very unlikable cast. But I felt like in that movie they start killing them off fairly early enough, and the body count spread out well enough. But in this movie, it just took a little too long to kill off these horrid, horrid people.
Okay, is it a sort of a kind of biggish budget movie or a medium budget movie?
Or is it like Nathan a movie?
Was it a Nathan movie?
I mean, it looks like it's got some money behind it, in my opinion. I thought the production values were pretty good.
Okay. And who's in it? Is it like Brad Pitt or Robert Downey Jr.?
I didn't really recognize anybody in it, so I don't know anybody like that's famous.
Okay, well, that's one to look out for or to avoid, one or the other. But thank you, Nathan. Anything else?
No, that's about it.
Okay. Well, how about you, Eric?
Okay, the only thing I've had a chance to watch or actually listen to this week, it's something I've wanted to get my hands on, ooh or misses, for a long time now. In 2003, Media Blasters and their Shriek Show label brought out Sergio Martino's After the Fall of New York, and they issued it with an audio commentary that apparently was quite controversial, and it was, I think, maybe a few days on the shelves when it was withdrawn and then reissued without this commentary because there were complaints and possible libel actions labeled against it. Now, the commentary track is by the star Michael Sopke, but it's moderated by two guys I've never heard of before called David Zuzello and Dolph Chiarino, who are post-apocalyptic Italian movie experts, allegedly, and they're moderating the commentary with the star, but they make some there's nothing major that they say in the course of the commentary, but they do slag off people who used to frequent the Mobius Forum, if you remember that. I mean, nothing too salacious is said. They do slag off people who are on the Mobius Forum and call them nerds and saying that they're ruining horror films for everyone by being so nerdy and picky about, you know, a millisecond missing from a print of a DVD. That's about as bad as they get. I mean, they are, I suppose, a bit unprofessional. And I can kind of see why Media Blasters pulled the commentary in the end and released the disc without it. But it was nice to see what the fuss was all about after all these years. You know, I don't think anyone could possibly have any grounds for suing them based on what I heard. But yeah, so that's all that. It's a great movie, by the way, After the Fall of New York. It has a similar plot to Children of Men, the film that had, is it Gerard Butler was in that? From the mid-noughties, is basically set in a dystopian future where there's only one fertile woman left and the, you know, fate of mankind depends on her and people have to try and track her down and protect her and keep her safe, blah, blah, blah.
So it that's was, the plot. Was like Clive Owen? Or Clive
Owen, that was it, sorry, yes. Not, yes,
I always get him mixed up with Clive Dunn, but he was in Dad's Army.
Yeah, and did he sing Granddad or one of those songs?
That was, it might have been. Yeah, it was one of the Dad's Army cast, which would mean nothing to our American chums.
Yeah, so that's what I watched. I won't lie. I mean, I own the film on DVD and I own it on Blu-ray, so I can say with, you know, without fear of recrimination, that I downloaded the commentary off a popular internet website that deals in illegally sourced film. So that's how I got to listen to it, because it's unavailable otherwise. So I had no choice. God made me do it.
God made you do it. Okay. Well, thank you, Eric. There's a couple of things I've watched recently, both newer films, actually. One was a film that's been out quite recently called Polaroid. Which is I watched it last night, and it's almost like a redo of I think it was a Thai film. I think it's either Thai or Japanese, or Shutter, which was remade in America several years later, which was essentially a story of like a cursed camera. So it's kind of a redo of that essentially, but it's kind of, as you imagine, somebody finds an old Polaroid camera, and every time they take a photo of anyone, that person, there's a shadow in the background of this shadowy figure, and that person, that thing comes after them, kills them. So it's kind of like a shadowy supernatural slasher movie, I kind of guess, to some degree. It's okay. It's fairly as generic as you might expect, kind of a modern teen horror movie. The thing that when we're watching actually is not more interesting, but we were sort of watching it and thinking that the cast seemed to be like straight out of America's Next Top Model. There wasn't a single ugly or slightly overweight or slightly different looking looking person in the whole cast. So everyone was young and beautiful. And I was saying it kind of missed the kind of thinking back to the people like Shelley in Friday 13th Part 3 and many of the kind of, I know the slasher movies have always been, had the young and beautiful in them, but they used to have at least be balanced out by people who looked a little bit ordinary or slightly overweight or had some other character quirks. But in this, it's just the cast is just so plastic. It's not badly done. It was a Dimension film, and it had the woman, and I can't remember. I saw a few of the what's it called? The Riverdale. The woman with red hair, the girl who's plays the bitchy character in that. She gets knocked off in the first 20 minutes of the movie, a bit like Drew Barrymore in Scream. But I think this is a film that kind of came and went very quickly, but it's kind of passable, I kind of guess. But it's ho-hum, seen it all before. But the other takeaway, of course, was thinking that with why teenage horror movies never die is that there's always a fresh crop of teenagers coming along who want to see facsimiles of themselves being killed on screen. So for when Shutter came out, whenever that was, I think it was at least 10 years ago, you know, most of the audience for Polaroid would have been in kindergarten. So it's just kind of recycle, reissue type kind of movie. But anyone seen it?
No.
Never heard of it.
I liked Shutter, but haven't heard of this one. Did it get a cinema release?
I thought it did. I don't get a cinema release over here, but it turned up on our kind of Spanish Netflix. So the other film I saw, a newer film, which you would have heard of probably, and it was much, much better, was The Prodigy, which was the kind of recent sort of killer child kind of movie, which I actually thought was really good. The character, the kid whose name I can't remember, but he was the little boy who gets bumped off in the beginning of It, the Stephen King adaptation. In this character, he's essentially reincarnated serial killer who's born the moment a serial killer dies. And at the moment he's born, he seems to basically be reincarnated. So it's that's not really giving a huge amount away because that's kind of set up in the first 5 minutes of the movie. The rest of the movie is kind of following his parents, trying to sort of find out what's wrong with him and why he's going from being this nice kid as he grows up to being this monster. And it's really well done. I thought it was kind of just it's kind of quite intriguing, has some quite shocking moments in it, and some great performances, and was just it's certainly not breaking any molds by any stretch, but I thought it was compared to Polaroid and a lot of other newer horror movies, I thought it was actually pretty well done. So that's kind of a marginal recommend from me. So any of you guys seen that?
Not yet. I do want to see it. I saw the trailer and I thought it looked kind of good. It looked generic, but it looked good.
Yeah, it is generic. Yeah,
the trailer looked like a lot of fun. I've been meaning to catch it, just haven't yet.
It kind of reminded me, I thought it was going to be like The Orphan. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, that's about 10 years ago. Well.
And it kind of it is to some degree, but it goes off in slightly different tangents you might not expect. And there's great sort of things made of this kind of little boy that's kind of suddenly starts talking with this kind of foul-mouthed serial killer, a bit like almost like the voice of Chucky.
The voice of Daniela,
yes. But that's definitely one to check out if you get a chance. But that's all.
Hey, Justin, I forgot. I watched Escape Room.
Oh, okay.
What do you think?
I loved it. It was hilarious. It was unbelievably ridiculous. I don't know how they pulled off some of these rooms because I've been in a real escape room and it's nothing like that whatsoever. But it was a lot of fun. It was very entertaining.
The floor didn't fall away in you, no?
No, nothing like that. And no heat lamps lit up and nearly burned me to death or anything like that.
Well, Eric will bring us back off or in, as it were, after the trailer for...
Well, it's not the trailer, I should say.
Oh, no, sorry.
Got a little treat for you all instead, which is a little bit of the two girls singing that wonderful Europop song as they drive to the farm at the start of the film.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jay Bullington.
And I'm Keith Carcino. And we want to know,
have you seen this one?
Have You Seen This One, a.k.a. Histo, is a podcast where two friends force, I mean invite, each other to watch movies the other one has never seen before. Sometimes it's a real movie treasure, and sometimes...
And sometimes it's pure cinema torture.
Boy, is it ever. Which reminds me, Keith, I'm still not done paying you back for Freddy Got Fingered. Oh, man.
So anyway, you may be asking yourself, what credentials or experience do these people have?
And the answer is zero. Zilch. Zip.
Yeah, we actually have no credibility whatsoever, and there's no reason we should be doing a show about movies.
Nope, but we're doing it anyway. Besides, doesn't everybody have a podcast nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's mandatory now.
Right? Yeah, so please join our movie party. You can find us on iTunes.
Or Stitcher.
Or Overcast.
Or pretty much wherever you catch your pods.
Yep, and there's a new episode every 2 weeks. So we really hope you listen in, because we really do want to know. Have you seen this one?
Was Susie and the Banshees there with one of their hit singles from the 80s. A carnage-heavy, no-holds-barred stalk-and-slash frightfest that recalls the genre's late 70s heyday, Switchblade Romance is an uncompromising and brilliantly unsettling film from writer-director Alexandra Aja. Best friends and holidaying students Marie and Alex travel to the countryside to visit Alex's parents, but when a homicidal maniac turns up at the house, leaving a trail of corpses in his wake, Alex and Marie are forced to fight for their lives with some heavy-duty weaponry. With a heart-pounding pace as brutal as its husky truck-driving killer, Switchblade Romance delivers a truly visceral experience. Undoubtedly, the film that horror junkies have been waiting for. Viewing alone is not advised. And of course, that obviously is the blurb from the UK release of the film, where it was known as Switchblade Romance, known as Haute Tension in France and High Tension, the direct translation in the US. So I suppose a heads up to anyone who hasn't seen High Tension before, we will be spoiling this, and it's a film very much dependent on its twist, and so it genuinely will be spoiled for you if you stay listening to the podcast. So watch the film first and then come back to us, because this is the sort of M. Night Shyamalan of horror movies. And it is controversial because of that, because the twist is so completely and utterly, I suppose, ludicrous. It kind of pulls the rug out from under you, and I suppose it's the equivalent of Bobby Ewing stepping out of the shower at the end of whatever season it was of Dallas. Leaving the twist aside, I think the film itself is one I would file under quite good, because it has some terrific moments in it, but I have a couple of issues with the film. First is, we were saying earlier, it's part of that new wave of French horror that was blossoming around this time, and it led to things like Martyrs and Frontiers and The Ordeal. And I was never fully on board with those movies. Martyrs, I quite liked, because I enjoyed the central concept. But personally, I think they revel in suffering and violence a bit too much for me, and I find them kind of depressing to watch. And they're not ones I would revisit. Maybe apart from High Tension, which I think is probably a bit more popcorny than the others, and so it has a rewatchability factor, I suppose, to a degree. The second issue I have is that the film sort of hits fifth gear quite early on in the film, and as a result, the film is quite unbalanced, ironically, like its lead character. The Massacre of the Family, which would normally be sort of in the latter stages of the movie, a similar type of slasher movie, is here. It's in the first third of the film, and it means that I just find the film peaks too early. So you get that wonderful tension of Marie trying to make it look like she's not in the house, so she makes her bed and she hides her belongings in the hope that the killer won't realize she's in there, which is very much like Susie Kendall does in Torso. And then we see her witness the quite over-the-top and graphic murders of the family, including a decapitation by what looks like a chest of drawers, a really graphic throat slitting, and the death of a young child as well, which is done sort of more tastefully off screen, and then the abduction of Alex as well. All this stuff is great, but to me it feels like the film then drops the gear, even though it's still action packed for the rest of it. I just don't think nothing else in the film sort of matches that opening half hour. It can't sustain the suspense or the interest for me, and especially when you know what the twist is, it kind of doesn't work for multiple viewings. The comparison I would make to it is probably something like Toolbox Murders, maybe the original one, where all the sort of groovy slacker action is, you know, shunted to the front of the film, and then the rest of the film doesn't, you know, have the same dynamic feel, I suppose. And then there's the twist, which I'm about to give out now, which is that our final girl, who we believe to be our heroine, actually turns out to be the killer. Marie is the killer in the film. We've been seeing everything from sort of her point of view. She's been imagining that there's this sort of husky, beefy, chubby killer out there, you know, killing off everyone, when in fact it's her doing it, because she's got a crush on Alex, her friend, and hence the title Switchblade Romance, apparently, because it's supposed to evoke both violent images and the romantic sort of element of the story. You know, that's why Alexandra Aja decided on that English language title. I suppose, is it a cheat? I suppose it is, I suppose, to a degree. I mean, when you rewatch it, I suppose you do see very subtle clues as to where the film is going to go, but it still feels like the rug has been pulled out from under you. I don't mind the twist, to be honest. I kind of like I love those M. Night Shyamalan twist movies, because they're never afraid to be incredibly ludicrous. You think of things like The Village or even The Sixth Sense, that type of thing. I love just ridiculous twists, and I don't care if they're, you know, they bend the, you know, plausibility at all. You know, and it's no more outlandish than the ending of Happy Birthday to Me, to be honest, and we all love that ending, don't we? But for me, yeah, the French extreme horror movement of the noughties just wasn't my cup of tea personally. I'm a bit of a wuss, I suppose. I prefer things to be a bit more tame and a bit more mainstream, maybe, and a bit more palatable.
You prefer a happy ending, don't you, Eric?
I love a happy ending, Justin, as you know. Mm. I don't know what that means. So for me, it probably would be a better film if, you know, the sort of the shrill hysteria of it had been introduced maybe later in the film, if it had been paced a bit slower, I suppose. We're talking about like films like The Nun from last year, where it's just nonstop ghosts and spooky faces and jump scares, and you know, sometimes that film needs to be breathed. Films can be too slow, but they can also be too fast, and I think that's what the problem I have with Switchblade Romance is. But having said that, its good moments are very, very good indeed. It's really well made, and I can see why Hollywood came calling for Alexandra Aja, because he handles the action really well. I just think that for me, there's too much action and not enough maybe build up. So for me, it's a very good movie, but it only seems to be a movie that consists of a third act. There's no sort of first or second act to it for me, and it doesn't give it the action time to breathe, really, or the story time to breathe. But I do like it. It sounds like I hate it, but I don't. I saw this actually in the cinema under the title Switchblade Romance, but you know, although it has an English language title, the version released over here was in French with English subtitles. So I was watching it for the first time this week, dubbed into English, which is what you guys got in the States. And the dubbing's not too bad. It's not as bad as you know, those early 80s Italian movies like Zombie Creeping Flesh and that, but it certainly does make the film feel a bit more Joe D'Amato than Alexandra Aja, I suppose. But it's a marginal thumbs up, as Joseph would say, as stealing Joseph's phrase, a marginal thumbs up for me. I suppose if you're into that French new wave of horror, this was probably one of the better ones, and you'll love it for that. So I'm intrigued to know what the rest of you guys think about this, because I'm not sure it's one we've discussed much on the podcast. So I'm going to go first to Nathan. It's y'all's turn.
I really like High Tension. I think that it's very gory, for sure. I think that it's, to me, it's never dull. I find that it's pretty action-packed all the way to the end. And I find that Concrete Saw death to be very brutal. I mean, every death is brutal, but something about that was just worse to me. I think it's the way that the saw just barely touches the driver and like just keeps slitting him open. It's just like, oh my God, it's so I don't know. I would feel almost exhausted watching it. Like, it's so intense.
Well, now that you mentioned it, I'm going to think twice about killing people with a concrete saw in future now after you said that.
Thanks. It's too much. You could be like Jason and kill with like an axe or a machete. But no, I actually really like the concrete saw scene. I think it's like super intense and very, like you said, it's very well done. I think that Marie especially turns in like a really great performance in this movie, especially with the twist. And like you said, the twist is kind of ludicrous. I mean, it just makes me think like Marie's in love with Alex, but you know, she killed Alex's family. That's not going to endear her to Alex very much. But I mean, she is crazy. So I guess, you know,
she's like a cat who delivers dead birds to your door thinking it's going to make you love them more.
Yeah. Like everybody comes between her and Alex, apparently, even gas station attendants. But I find the movie to be very well done. I really like it. I do understand what you're saying about that French New Wave kind of has this like very depressing quality to it. And normally I'm not into depressing kind of films, but I don't know. There's something about these that I kind of like. I don't know what it is. I'm not good at analyzing it, I guess I should say. But I do say that I think it's incredibly gory, especially the unrated version. It's just unbelievable, like gore, like from beginning to end. Like when the dad gets decapitated with that like Chester drawer or whatever, like the blood like spurts out of his body. I'm like, God, does the human body hold that much? But that's kind of part of the fun. Mm. So I got to say, you know, I would recommend it because I really like it. And I know the twist is super controversial. But if I'm perfectly honest, like I probably would have preferred a more straightforward slasher, but the twist just doesn't bother me. I'm okay with it. I mean, you know, if that's the route they decided to go and, you know, kind of took it into, you know, a little bit more of an outlandish territory in my opinion. But I like that. Like you said, Happy Birthday to Me is completely outlandish at the end, but that's what I love about it. So, I mean, it just works for me here too. So I say twist or no twist, I still think the movie holds up really well. So thumbs up from me.
Okay. Excellent. Joseph, what do you think?
Yeah, thumbs up for me. I like High Tension. I think it's one of those movies you have to watch twice. If you the first time you watch it and you don't know that Marie and the guy are the same person, it is kind of a cheat because it, I guess, kind of plays with some logical leaps. But I think if you watch this movie a second time knowing that Marie and the guy are the same and you don't think of it as a twist as much and kind of think of it more as a visual manifestation of Marie's psyche, it works a lot better. Because like Marie, she, you know, like women have longer orgasms than men. She has an orgasm so long that it turns into this murderous kind of presence that just she's wanting to keep, you know, her love with Alex pure. And then this, I guess I'm thinking the guy is sort of this kind of gestating kind of long, the last held remnants of her kind of, I guess, heterosexuality, as it were. Maybe she's in the closet and she's this is the kind of the visual representation of her letting go. And this it's she's got a lot of kind of, I don't know, sort of like just murderous feelings tied up into that. And she just wants to, you know, break free. I just kind of look at it that way and not as a surprise or a shock. And it works a lot better. But as a standard slasher film, I think it, you know, it would have worked a lot better. I mean, the guy comes in and he just starts killing the family and it's really graphic and really brutal. But, you know, like Eric said, there is some sort of a popcorn kind of element here. I don't think it's as harrowing or brutal as, you know, something like Inside or Martyrs. I think there's a little bit of tension here, you know, as a, you know, like a stalk and more stalk and slash and not more just lingering on suffering. So if you disregard the twist or if you kind of look at it as a kind of a, you know, like a visual representation of the Marie character, it works. Or if you just disregard the twist altogether, the slasher stuff really, really works. It's very gory. You know, like I said, very tense. I really love the scene. Like Nathan said, I love the concrete buzzsaw scene, but I really love the implication here that Marie is so fixated on Alex that she just, you know, she'll kill anybody. She kills the kid, she kills the gas station guy. I mean, everybody's like, no one is safe from her. I mean, that's how much she loves this Alex character. I think the movie gets a little too, what's the word I'm looking for? I think it kind of I guess it kind of meanders a little bit towards the end, and it does kind of revel a little bit too much in the kind of suffering aspect of it. Like, you know, like Nathan said, that buzzsaw death scene is very, very effective, but it's also, it kind of goes on too long. And I think the last 10 or 15 minutes of the movie does that. But I do love the ending with Marie and the psych ward. She looks through the two-way mirror and she knows that Alex is on the other side of the mirror. And it's a really haunting image. But yeah, a marginal thumbs up. It's not a movie I can go back and watch over and over, but I do like it. I think it's very tense. This time around I was able to disregard the twist. So I had a lot of fun with it. So yeah, thumbs up.
Awesome. And one thing I forgot to mention, actually, when I was talking about it, is that when Justin reviewed it on Hysteria Lives, he included a little click here if you want to know what the twist is, and he had a little pop-up. And of course, I can't resist. I'm not going to be able to resist pressing, you know, click here to see what the twist is. So I think I had read about the twist before I saw the film. But as I said, the twist doesn't really bother me as such. I like ludicrous plot points in my films, but I can see kind of why it wound some people up. Justin, you gave this a glowing 4 out of 5 back in the day. So do you still stand by that review?
I do. Yeah, I think this film is fantastic. I don't have a problem with the twist. I can't remember. Actually, I haven't read the old review, so I can't remember what I said back then. But I think it's kind of telegraphed all the way through. If you rewatch it, like I was today, and I was looking for the clues, as it were, sort of like telegraphing what was coming. And at the beginning of the movie, when they're in the car, when she wakes up from her dream, she says, "I dreamt I was being chased through the woods by a man." And I think Alex says, "Who was it?" And she said, "Oh, it was me." So it kind of telegraphs it. I mean, obviously, when you're watching the film for the first time, these things will go over your head. They're not that obvious. But one thing is, when I was looking, not getting into background at the moment, but just one of the things that it said, that the disgusting scene with the killer, or the kind of the imagined killer in giving himself a blowjob with a severed head, was actually Alex's head. Whether or not that's true or not.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it here, and it does look like it could be her head.
Yeah, because there's also things, if you notice, that the scene at the end where Marie kind of runs up to the car and hammers on the window is actually what Alex does at the end of the movie. So there's all these kind of things. Now, there is a kind of misdirection, but I kind of saw it watching this time, was that Marie, there genuinely were two distinct personalities running in tandem, almost like, you know, like those old movies like Wicked, you know, when you had the split screen film and you had different things going on in each side of the screen, that she actually really believed that she was chasing the killer and was trying to free Alex, but she was also doing these terrible things, and but she has a complete split personality. So actually what we're seeing was what the that one side of the movie was. It almost could work. I don't know if you've ever seen Wicked, which was a kind of like a proto slasher from the early 70s with Tiffany Bolling in it, but that the whole film is shot with two a split screen showing different things happening at different angles and different things going on without inside the movie. And it could have been interesting to have done it with this, with her point of view and the killer's point of view running concurrently, but obviously they went the route that they did. I actually think it works really well, kind of going balls to the wall, you know, the murder in the farmhouse kind of straight off, and then kind of carries on from there. I don't, for me, it doesn't feel like it loses anything. I think it's pinning its flag to the mast and saying, this is what we are, you know, it's kind of high tension. This is a tribute to slasher movies. And of course, I don't think there's, although I agree with you, Eric, that the twist really isn't anything more bizarre than you would have got in Happy Birthday to Me. But most slash movies in the early 80s and late 70s and early 80s that it's playing tribute to wouldn't have gone for a twist quite as brazen as this one. Having said that, I think without the twist, then this film probably wouldn't be as well remembered. And I think part of the reason it's well remembered now and it's people still talk about it is because of the twist. Love it or loathe it, it's the thing that's gives this movie legs to some degree. So I think it's great. I was watching again today, and I think it was the scene in the bathroom stalls at the petrol station. I think it's just incredibly well done. The reveal as it was is when you actually see it, when you watch it back. I think the signs were there that Marie was a psycho. Whether the sexual politics of it stand up, and so much that her lesbianism has driven her to be a raving lunatic. And the fact is, the other film that kind of it made me think of today was Bloodbeat, that it seems that her murderous spree was started by masturbation.
Yeah, I know what you're gonna say.
Yeah, and sort of by the female orgasm.
Just one long orgasm that turned into like a big murder spree.
Well, exactly. So it kind of reminded me of
the terrible Europop song drove her mad on the way to the farmhouse.
Well, it's very possibly. I mean, you notice when she goes into the house, then when she's introduced to Alex's father, she's very cool, isn't she? She's very kind of she's not warm and open and smiley and saying hello. It's kind of, she's very kind of calculating, looking at them with almost suspicion, which is, again, it kind of tips the hat to it. And I think the part of the problem that people have of the twist is that you've got her character is so likable, you root for her, so when you actually have the rug pulled out from underneath you, it hurts as somebody who's rooting for a character. It kind of hurts. I mean, the other scene that made me think, and again, what they were trying to tip the audience to the fact that Marie was the killer, was the when the father is killed at the door, when the killer's whacks him on the head with a hatchet and reaches in, that it goes from Marie upstairs watching it, and the camera zooms like a Sam Raimi style camera zoom down the stairs and into the killer. So it's almost at that point, it's kind of hinting that Marie is in fact actually the killer, although of course what you're seeing is not reality. But it's I think it's just as a really good example of the unreliable narrator, and so much that you're watching you're being told a story by someone who's delusional, essentially. And so I think that's quite clever, and I think that, again, I just come back to the reason that's why I think this film is still talked about today, because without that twist I don't think it would be as celebrated or as controversial as it is now. So but it's a full thumbs up from me.
I'm just thinking, Nathan, imagine if in the final 10 minutes of Friday the 13th it turned out that Alice was the killer. How would you have liked that?
Like part two or part one?
Part one.
I would have been okay with that.
Oh, no, you wouldn't. You would have cried.
No, because I just won't. I just know that Alice is alive. Whether she killed people or not, she is alive.
Well, I suppose the twist is the equivalent of, say, Justin. It turns out that Susie from Susie and the Banshees is actually Sabrina.
Well, I
can't imagine.
Or she's
actually Toya. What would you do then?
Oh, that'd be too good for him.
I can't imagine sort of a Sabrina bouncing around in a graveyard singing Boys, Boys, Boys. But well, it's interesting. I mean, when we come on to the feedback section, which I'm sure we will do soon, is probably this title has probably attracted, would you say, Joseph, maybe the most we've ever had comments, or certainly high up there?
Oh, it's 100% the most feedback we've ever gotten on a movie.
Well, there you go. Is it what should we do? Should we do feedback first? Or, well, given that we've talked about the twist, then maybe we could do get some background after we've got some feedback from people on the film. What do you reckon?
Okay, high tension Facebook feedback. Elias Vasquez says, great gore and good cast, but man, that twist just falls apart the more and more I think about it. But it's so good up until that point. Tom Burkhead says, I'm another fan up to the twist, and it isn't that I think the twist doesn't make sense. I just don't find it necessary or interesting. Benjamin Mason says, fun film with a nonsensical twist. Still a film to recommend, but it has issues. James Packman says, love it. Easily my fave of the so-called extreme French films. People who say the ending doesn't make sense, didn't watch it closely enough, makes perfect sense. Chris Huddleston says, love it, and I have no problem with the twist when I first saw it. I'm bothered by the fact that about 75 movies since then have used the same twist, though. Soren Feldfoss Thompson says, I love it, including the twist. Rodney Barnett says, love it. I like that it was not afraid to be both violent and shocking in its choice to twist itself so deeply in the final minutes. As a picture of madness, it's amazing, and as an exercise in horror, it's disturbing. Tim Murr says, I should rewatch it, but the ending was just silly. There's good work being done within the twist, but the twist itself is about as effective as air noisily leaking out of a balloon. It's annoying, and when it's over, it's flat and useless. Ron Burgundy says, superb. The slasher chase scene distilled and then extended to 90 terrifying minutes. W.C. Collins says it was okay. David J. Gehrig says, great flick. Ending is hard to reconcile. Simon Logan says, THC drinking game suggestion. Take a drink every time Justin refers to this as Strawberry Switchblade. And I don't think he has once in this episode.
Not in this episode, but in past episodes you have called this Strawberry Switchblade, which were a popular pop. Yes. They were one of the pop in the mid-80s.
Jim LaRose says, loved it until the twist. Nick Yeoman says, I've only seen it once years ago, knew absolutely nothing about it, and it freaked me out and blew my mind. I wasn't completely sold on the twist, but it was a great one-time watch for me. I've never rewatched it. J.W. Durbin says, movies with major twists I find hard to revisit. David Holt Jr. says, it was really good till that really dumb and lame twist at the end. And boy, we could have a drinking game for how many times the word twist is used. Morgan Sushek says, loved it. People can talk all the shit they want, but everything about this film is on point, even the final reveal. Rebecca McCallum says, adore it. Huge fan in general of the films of the French extremity, and this is one of my favorites. It's an hour and a half of pure adrenaline rush, and although many people don't feel the ending is as strong as the rest of the film, I enjoyed its little homages and nods to things like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It felt brave and exciting, plus the cinematography is awesome. Mark Cummings says, Switchblade Romance is a far better title for me, but yeah, it's a freaking great film. Amanda Reyes says, two-thirds of an amazing film. I can forgive the ending, though, because honestly, most of it is so good. Glenn Brewer says, it's an example of an ending ruining a movie for me. I've only seen it once, so maybe I should watch it again. AJ Anderson Yakukowicz says, this film plays a nasty trick on the audience. That being said, the film does manage to still be an effective thrill ride before the twist is revealed. Great cinematography and practical effects elevate this film beyond the usual pedigree. Josh Grattan says, as already said, rarely has an ending docked so many points from a decent film. Wes Ray says, the end completely kills it for me. Haven't rewatched it since. Mitch King says, I don't think I've ever been as let down with an ending of a film. It was doing everything right, and out of left field comes that twist. Still can't enjoy it to this day. Graham Wright says, the ending makes perfect sense in the fact that all the misleading scenes are from the female protagonist's point of view and aren't necessarily the truth. The director even changes the film stock for these scenes. I don't think I noticed it. Did you guys notice that?
No, can't say I did.
I don't think I did. Yeah. The untrustworthy narrator goes back at least as far as Christie's Roger Ackroyd, and the ending is great in my book. Matt Alton says, love it. Jenny Hall Cameron says, I felt while watching it that as a horror fan that I was to really like it, but I really didn't. I think if I gave it a rewatch, I still wouldn't like it. I know I'm in the minority, but I didn't like it. Twist ending was more annoying than redeeming. Mike Justice says, I hate it for its ending, not just because it sucks in the context of the movie, but because that lame twist totally screwed me over. And now I suspiciously expect something similar in every new slasher movie I watch. Screw you, High Tension. Billy Vidrine? One of my favorite French extremity movies and a great throwback to the slashers of the past, right down to that twist at the end that infuriates so many people. Wiley Times says there should have been a sequel where Marie escapes from a mental hospital and goes after Alexia. I think they could have done something interesting with that trope. Also, the impossible twist ending could be expanded more. Maybe might not be as dumb if her killer persona was explained. Jim Gunthorpe Jr. says, an effectively brutal, beautifully filmed movie, which is absolutely destroyed by a completely nonsensical twist. Benjamin Ricci says, the ending cheats the audience, and that's not okay. Christopher Bell Humor says, I think it's a brilliant film, and I love the ending. The story is being told by Marie, so it makes complete sense that we watch it unfold from her twisted mind. D.S. Cohen, that's Amanda's husband, says, an ending that ruined a great film. Everything until the twist is brilliant, but the twist was so horrible and offensive, it retroactively killed everything I enjoyed about the film. Roger B. says, grueling, intense, though at times frustrating. I go between enjoying the controversial ending to finding it ruins what went before. Roger Kelly says, love it. Tim S. Turner says, while the ending twist is complete bullshit that contradicts what's come before, you can't deny that no one does gore like the French. Willie Greer says, twist aside, either an unofficial remake or ripoff of Kuntz's Intensity. Good gore, though. Tom Sullivan says, love this film, brutal, tense, and has a strong leading woman role. William Campbell says it's garbage. Over on the forums, Mr. Palmer says Dean Koontz should have sued. David T says, great film. The slasher film chase scene extended over 90 minutes. BTK says, the killer looks like Donald Trump and it really bothers me. That's what I thought, yeah. Napoleon Wilson says, great movie. The twist doesn't bother me in the slightest. Some incredible gore mixed with a titular high tension makes this a winner. Over on Instagram, Andrew Moncrief says, one of several movies from that period that I'd like better without a silly, inorganic psychological twist. Identity is another. I like Identity, actually. The Squint one says, I enjoy the film, but the ending doesn't work at all. Beak Person says, crazy violence, artfully done. But yeah, now that I know that the ending is coming, I avoid this movie. Ivy Boy 89 says, eh. Some People Ain't Me says, the ending is so awful, but everything up until that point is genius and incredibly suspenseful. Todd, All Things Horror, says, potentially one of my favorite revenge slasher movies, well, at least in my top 10 until the twist is revealed. I do still highly enjoy it for the great violence, pacing, and characters, but that twist was completely unnecessary. How about that freaking stair bookcase kill, though? Damn. P.P. Sweats. I like that name, P.P. Sweats. The ending does work. If you don't like it, that's fine, but don't tell me it doesn't make sense. I love the film. Criterion J says, super fantastic film up until the ending. Stuntman Mark says, love this film, and contrary to what seems to be common opinion, I love the ending too. Snapcaster Mage says, a problematic fave. Ending sucks the air out of the rest of the movie. Tom Collins, author, that the real Tom Collins? Wow, I don't think so. Groundbreaking movie. I love the grimness of French noughties horror. Alexandre Aja is so underrated as an auteur. Piranha 3D is sublime. And on Twitter, Geraldo says, still love it. And I don't think that's the other Geraldo. France and Beautiful Girls, instant win. Rob B. Movie Cult says, well done. I saw it way after the initial hype, but it still held up. Eugene Weaver says, positively love this movie. Watched it countless times, and I never grow tired of it. Features incredible practical gore effects from the legendary Gianetto di Rossi. A fantastic first 30 minutes of cat and mouse, very similar to Dean Koontz's novel Intensity. Murray Lothian says, brutal, thrilling, but narratively awkward. Does help to remember the opening shot and line of dialogue before you rip apart the twist, though. And that's all the feedback we have.
Excellent. Mm. Well, thank you.
I'm surprised at the amount of people who just don't like the twist. I thought there'd be 50-50, but it seemed to be 80-20.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Somebody said something, one of the earlier bits of feedback you read out there, somebody made a good point there and it articulated what I wanted to say, which is that I felt the twist was maybe unnecessary. I don't think it needed a twist. I just thought it was propelling along quite nicely.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it like just as a kind of a representation of her, it works, but it you don't really even need the twist. The film works just fine without it. It's just a psycho versus a final girl type movie.
Mm. But I think it's also worth obviously considering, because it's a French film as well, that, you know, it's all very existential and a bit like maybe like a Jean Cocteau dream. What do you think, Eric?
I thought that's exactly what it was like, Justin. I thought it was like a Jean Cocteau movie. Yeah.
Well.
Wow.
Wow.
What an asshole.
What an asshole. What? Well, let's play the how to get in contact with the show, and this is how to do it.
All I know is today's October the 31st. 31 backwards is 13. It's Friday. It's Halloween. It's the 13th anniversary of the lawnmower killings. It's a crazy loose. It's prom night.
Hi, this is Tracy Savage, Debbie from Friday the 13th, Part 3. For the best podcast ever on old slasher movies, be sure you find Hysteria Continues. You will be glad you did. And hey, stay out of Crystal Lake, okay?
Every episode, we celebrate a classic slasher movie, such as Friday the 13th, Halloween, My Bloody Valentine, Happy Birthday to Me, and... Crazy Fat Ethel 2? The Hysteria Continues, bringing slash with panache since 2011. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and all good podcatchers.
Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Maddie.
Do you like horror movies?
I sure do.
Well, did you know that most horror movies are inspired by real-life horror?
Really? Like what?
Well, take The Shining, for instance. That's based on Stephen King's real-life addictions, or The Purge, which could be our country any minute now.
Oh.
Poe and the Strangers, which is based on a real-life murder. People should be talking about these things.
Hey, guys.
Oh, hey, Producer Michael.
Hi. Well, I hate to break it to you, but somebody already is. It's you.
That's right. We are Frygay the 13th, the podcast where we talk about horror in real life and horror in media, all from an LGBTQ perspective.
Because we gay, y'all.
We are proud members of the Legion Podcast Network, and we can be found on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.
And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Come along with us on this crazy journey, and as always,
get slayed.
Is a cat meow wanting in Justin's recording room? Do you think Justin? I know Justin and Stuart. They live in this tiny little house while they're waiting on their house. Do you think they use the cat's litter pan?
They probably do, actually. Yeah. Well, if one of them's in the bathroom, the other one really needs to go.
Justin poos in the litter pan.
Yeah.
Stuart stands over and makes sure he covers it up. Oh, you're crazy.
Don't press stop.
At the end of this movie, Alex goes to visit Marie, and she's in a crazy hospital, or a mental hospital, I mean. And they say that Marie can't see her, but Marie can sense her because Marie looks at her and like reaches out to her. I have a feeling that Marie never left the mental hospital. I don't have any creativity today.
Well, here, let me pick up. I always thought what would be a good idea after the credits would be Alex eventually convinces Marie that she's, you know, sick in the head, and Marie lets Alex go. But Marie is stuck in the hospital for the rest of her life, and she eventually falls in love with somebody else and then just goes on a killing spree in the hospital.
Mm.
So there you go.
What about you, Eric?
I think that Marie escapes from the hospital, disguises herself as a boy, very much as You Like It by Shakespeare. How about that for that outdoes your Cocteau reference, Justin?
Ooh, Shakespeare.
And she changes her name to Mark, and she comes and works with me because Marie does look a bit like my friend Mark.
Well, I'm trying to think. I think she does escape from the mental institution, but what she does is every day they bring her sort of bread, and she eats some of it and takes some of it off, and she disguises herself as a giant baguette, and they come and realize, think she's escaped, and then someone carries the baguette out, and then she goes on a bread-style killing spree after...
Stop it, Justin. That's terrifying. It's really scaring me.
Is it?
Yeah.
What, the baguette killer?
Giant baguette killing people. Oh my god. Oh
yes. So that's why, yeah, I, you know, if Alexander Asher is listening, then we're happy for you to use that.
Definitely go see that movie.
I kind of thought that Justin would say something like Marie, she eventually gets out of the hospital and turns her life around, goes on to become a very popular pop starlet, but it's in her mind she's not really popular. She's actually like working at like bars and run down nightclubs, and her name's Toya.
Well, I would have said that, but the film came out sort of 20 years after Toy's last hit, so it wouldn't have been very
believable. Shut up, you whores. You utter whores.
It could have been a prequel to Toya.
Go fuck yourself.
God.
There you go. You deserve that, all of you.
That's a marathon of, like, insults.
Well, yeah. Eric, do we have a...
We do.
It's my joke of the week. It's so
So I caught my flatmate stealing my muesli the other day. For the rest of the evening, there was definitely a sense of oat tension in the apartment. America.
No, I don't know what that is.
It's like granola.
I don't know what it is either.
It's breakfast cereal. It's like dried oats and dried fruit, and then you put milk on it and eat it.
Eric.
It's kind of like honey bunches of oats.
Well, that's what we call it, I guess.
Oh, Eric, your joke was so bad that two-thirds of our listeners didn't even know what it was.
Global term.
That was a terrible joke. That wasn't. Awful. It was truly awful.
Don't blame me for Americans not adopting the word muesli.
That was truly terrible, Eric. Thank you.
Oh, hang on. I think Daniela has something to say to you.
I hate you.
Good God, Daniela.
So let's draw a discreet veil over the grave of that joke.
I want all our European people listeners to write in and say how brilliant the joke was, because they'll know what muesli is.
Well, muesli's Swedish, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for all of our four listeners in Sweden.
It's not just sold in Sweden, Justin.
I've never heard. What is muesli?
Oh, shut up. You know exactly what muesli is.
Is it like mucilage? Like horse just, milk or something?
You're all being stupid now. I think that wouldn't be surprised if this was a conspiracy. Just like the Princess Margaret Voorhees, whatever it was you had for me.
Her name was Veronica.
Yeah, whatever.
Princess Margaret Voorhees.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. So anyway, well, let's get on to some background before it all goes horribly wrong again. Yeah,
Nathan, do you have any background?
No.
Joseph, do you have any background?
What? No.
Awesome. Justin,
do have some. I won't give away too much because you probably got the similar background. But the thing that surprised me, actually, I didn't realize until I looked into it today, that the film wasn't actually shot in France. It was shot in Romania for budgetary reasons. So I wouldn't have known that at all. It was the term we were looking for, and that you may have already said this, was the film being associated with what was termed the New French Extremity movement, which it birthed films like Calvaire, Frontiers, Inside, and Martyrs, all sort of fairly quickly followed, and there was a small spate of these extreme horror movies. Of course, the difference, obviously, with High Tension was that it was, say, it's a love letter back to the splatter movies of the late 70s and especially early 80s, and the special effects, which were the things I think probably at the time wowed people, because we, even back then, we were kind of in the throes of the beginnings of, not even the beginnings, I mean, I think it was the kind of computer generated special effects were around, but this was going back to the kind of the gore effects that you would have seen in a Lucio Fulci film, and then we covered the Beyond recently on a Patreon pick. And of course Alexandre Aja was kind of, it's a love letter to those movies, and he employed Giannatti di Rossi, who was the favoured special effects maestro by Lucio Fulci. So that wasn't a massive surprise. One thing, I'll hand it over to you, Eric, after this, because I think you've got a lot more to say. One thing that surprised me was that the film was released in the United States and was a bit of a flop, in so much that it was put out, and I think there was something like $14 million. This is according, of course, to IMDb, but $14 million advertising budget for the film to be released in the United States, and it was cut quite heavily. And of course, the problem when you're marketing a gore movie, which has got most of its gore or a lot of its gore cut out, that can cause problems. The English dub, I don't know which version we have now, because I had this film way back when, before it came out on DVD or Blu-ray, or certainly well, DVD back there in the United Kingdom. I had the Thai VCD of it. Do you remember those video compact discs?
Yeah, it's gone back.
It's going back. Now, apparently, and I got rid of it years ago, so I can't remember, but I read somewhere that it had a really, really, really bad, like, Eurotrash-style dub. Now, whether or not it's a... it's the same dub, because obviously the film itself actually doesn't have a huge amount of dialogue, really, certainly after you get past the first third of the movie. But the English dub's quite bad, and I think it was criticised at the time of its release in America by a number of critics as being badly dubbed. Whether or not that was the dub, or there was another dub which is even worse, I don't know. But I did a quick search on YouTube to see if I could find the infamous Thai dub, but I couldn't. So if anyone knows, do let us know. But I know there's some more controversy with Dinar Kuntz, but I'll leave that to you, Eric, I'm sure you've got some info on that.
The controversy about what?
Dean Kuntz.
Oh, Dean Koontz. Yeah, sorry. No, I have information about that. I didn't realize that it was apparently ripping off a Dean Koontz novel until we were listening to the feedback there. So do you have anything on that?
Yes. Well, apparently I haven't read the book and I don't know. I did look at the kind of the Wikipedia kind of summary of the thing, and it sounds it's kind of relates to a murder in the in a house, so where a young woman was going to stay in and people have been killed in the house. I couldn't see if it actually went, from what I can understand, that was the only basis of its kind of similarity to the book and the film. But of course, that may not have been the case. But I did find a quote here. Well, they're basically paraphrasing what the author said. Oh, here we go. Apparently on his website, and I did look at the link and it's not there anymore, so whether or not, again, this is true, you know, who knows, but it said that he stated, the author stated he's aware of the comparison but would not sue, and this is a quote attributed to Dean Koontz, was because he found the film so puerile. Well, actually, it couldn't be attributed to him because it's not speaking in the first person. But anyway, it says, the quote says, because he found the film so puerile, so disgusting, so intellectually bankrupt, that he didn't want the association with it that would inevitably come if he pursued an action against a filmmaker. So, again, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But certainly the director did say that the film was partly inspired by that book, and he had read the book, so at least he came clean on that front.
Well, they made a 1997 TV movie called Intensity based off that novel. It was starring John C. McGinley from Scrubs. I haven't seen it. You know, it being made for television, I doubt it has much, if any, gore in it, but there is a video. Oh, how is it?
I actually really liked it, but it's nowhere near as intense as I would say High Tension is. I mean, okay. it's for like a TV movie, they do a good job of, you know, keeping the suspense going and making you wonder where the movie's going to end up. So, I mean, on that front, I would recommend it. But just don't expect the level of, like, you know, intense suspense and gore that you would get with High Tension.
It's not Intensity in 10 Cities, no?
Don't make me laugh.
That's my Wayne's World reference.
See, did you hear that, actually? Eric, did you notice what you did?
What?
You made one of us laugh.
Shut up, you. It's not my fault that America's never heard of Moosley.
Okay, so Eric, anyway.
Actually, what we need to do on our Facebook page is put up a link to Moosley before the podcast goes out so that people can educate themselves on what Moosley is, and then the joke will have more effect.
Okay, you do that.
Actually, I think you should do that. Preceding this podcast, you should just post an image of that cereal and then not say anything. Just say, in time, you'll know.
Yes. I think I will. Okay, so I've got some more background. As I said, it showed up in UK and Ireland as Switchblade Romance, which was Alexandra Aja's chosen English language title for the film. The US did not like the title, so they just went for a direct translation, High Tension, where it was released dubbed over here. Again, as I said, we had it in French with English subtitles. Maiwen, is that how you pronounce it? She plays Alex in the film. She was once married to Luc Besson, and they started dating when she was only 15, and he was 32. And by the time she was 16, she was pregnant with his child. And I was thinking, this can't be right. But apparently the age of consent in France is 15, but it's still sounds a bit dodgy to me. But it all ended in 1997 anyway, when Luc Besson dumped her for Mia Jovovich. As Joseph was saying, the effects are by somebody was saying Justin, you said the effects were by Ginetto De Rossi, who had done a lot of work with Lucio Fulci. We saw his work in Zombie Flesh Eaters, The Beyond, and House by the Cemetery, but he also did some Hollywood stuff. He worked on Dune and Rambo 3 as well in the 80s. I'm assuming they must have been filming in Italy. It was released in the US, as you were saying, on June the 10th, 2005, to 1,323 theatres, which is quite a big release. And it grossed, as you're saying, a paltry $3.6 million. So it was kind of a flop, I suppose. Frank Calhoun, who plays Jimmy, the gas attendant guy, he went on to direct P2 and also the Maniac remake starring Nathan's boyfriend in 2012. That's, what's his name again?
Elijah Wood.
That's it, yes. Would he? Would Elijah Wood? Yeah.
have either of you seen P2?
Yes, that's the one in the underground car park.
The car garage. Yeah. Yeah, I like that movie. I think it's underrated.
Yeah, that guy's also gone on to direct Amityville: The Awakening, I think, last year, but I haven't seen that yet. But anything with prefixed Amityville just screams straight to video, so I can't imagine it's brilliant. But I'll give it a go, because I liked P2 and I liked the Maniac remake. He also acted, he went on to act in Alexander Aja's 2010 reboot of Piranha, which was kind of fun. That ghastly Europop hit, I was lying when I said it was Susie and the Banshees. It wasn't actually them, Justin. You can relax.
What a surprise.
It's an Italian song called Sara Perche Ti Amo, performed by Ricci e Paveri, who are an Italian pop group who represented Italy in the Eurovision Song Contest in 1978. And they had a big trans-European hit with this in 1981. It didn't make any impact in the UK and Ireland. I'd never heard the song before. But it hit number one in France, which probably explains why it's included in this film.
It's also it's a nice throwback, isn't it, to the time that he was celebrating as well.
Exactly. 80s. And I suppose it would have been a song maybe that they would have heard as kids, maybe, and that's why they're singing along to it, even though it's very, very cheesy sounding. Mm. And certainly it's weird hearing it up against Muse's Newborn, is that the Muse songs on the soundtrack? The direct translation of the song is "It Must Be So Because I Love You," but an English language version of the song was released later in 1981, and it was under the title "Make It With Me." And if you're all really good boys and girls, you may get to hear that English language version of the song at the end of the podcast. Aren't you lucky? Yes. So this was Alexandra Aja's second feature film after the post-apocalyptic Furia in 1999, which I haven't seen, to be honest. He went from Switchblade Romance to the remake of Hills of Eyes, which I thought was quite good. And the English language remake of Mirrors then followed, which again I thought was decent, nothing exceptional. The reboot of Piranha in 3D, Horns, and The Ninth Life of Louis Drax, which I don't know if I've seen that one. Has anyone seen that? No. Okay. No.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I think, is it a horror or is it a sci-fi? Or I can't remember.
I think it's a, he's also produced a thriller, isn't it? Hmm? It's got, what's his name from, I've seen it on Netflix, but it's got that guy who was in all the Northern Irish guy who was on all those bondage movies.
Oh, I think he's from The Republic. I think he's from not far from me.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Jamie Dornan.
Yes, that's right.
Is his name Eric Threlfall?
Jamie Dornan, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Is he from 50 Shades of Grey? Yeah.
That's the one I'm thinking of, yeah.
And Alexandra Aja's new one, I think myself and Joseph were discussing the trailer for it, came up recently, Crawl, it's called, which it looks like...
That looks like a lot of fun.
It looks like it's a flood brings killer alligators into a... is she trapped in the basement of her house or something, and there's alligators swimming around?
It looks like she's trapped in a parking garage, or I can't remember, but it looks fun. That's all I know.
Yeah. He also... he produced some films as well. He produced P2 actually for his friend there, as mentioned earlier, in Maniac, and The Pyramid and The Other Side of the Door. So he's made quite a career for himself in Hollywood. I mean, all his movies are the ones I've seen, I've been entertained by. So he's a decent enough director. And I think that is all the background that I have.
Okay. Well, there's one other little bit that I thought was kind of interesting was that originally the twist was not going to be shown. And so you wouldn't know that Marie was in fact a killer until the final shot of her sat in the hospital in the handcuffs. And apparently, Luke, you haven't said this, have you?
No.
Eric, no. And apparently Luc Besson actually said to Alexander Aja that he should change it and make the final reel where the switch happens, because otherwise it would be even more, you can imagine it would be, people would be more up in arms if the twist had happened just at that final, 2 minutes of the movie.
The other thing I read as well is that the intention originally was to have the whole film set in the farmhouse and not take it away from that location, but they decided to expand it into to make it into kind of a road movie, I suppose, for the second half.
Yeah, yeah. So, right. Well, thank you, Eric, for your pick. So
next week's pick is...
Well, next time. Who is picking next time? I think it's Joseph.
We're going to talk about the 1982 Australian slasher, Next of Kin.
Oh.
Fantastic.
I still don't know if I've seen that. Is it good?
Well, you'll find out soon enough, I guess.
There's a new Blu-ray out of it, so you should have time to obtain that if you...
I think I bought it. Is that the one I said I bought?
Yeah, I thought you said you bought it.
Okay, yes. Oh, excellent. That's good timing.
Yeah, is it time for your nap now, Eric?
I think it is. Mm. Hey, I've been up...
It is Mosley. He's going to eat some Mosley.
Moosley!
Oh, is it from a cow, Moosley? Oh,
I can't believe that it's not called Moosley in the States. I just cannot believe this. It's like a arugula.
You should start a campaign, Eric. Start a campaign to get it introduced.
It is a campaign. You're all out to get me.
I can't believe your joke was so bad.
You hacked into my computer, saw what my joke was about, and now you're pretending that you don't know what Moosley is.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's exactly what happened.
When we're finished recording here, I'm going to email Meep and ask him, has he heard of Moosley? And if he tells me he has and it's a popular food stuff in America, I'm coming to get you all.
God, that's a motivation for a slasher movie, isn't it? Right there and there.
Yeah. He kills people over Moosley.
Yeah.
There has been stranger motivation. So, okay, well, and we're playing out with the English language version of the Italian.
Yes, let me see what they're called again. They are called Ricci e Poveri, and it's called Make It With Me.
Well, thank you for listening to The Hysteria Continues, and we look forward to greeting you next time for a little bit of an Aussie early 80s slasher gem. So if you've not seen it, then say that it's just out on Blu-ray. So a great way to watch the movie for the first time. So say goodbye to the good people.
Bye. Enjoy your muesli.
Bye.